Play and stay on Washington State's Kitsap Peninsula, the natural side of the Puget Sound. Stand up paddleboarding, hiking, great restaurants and breweries. I'll tell you more about your next vacation destination later in the show. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal, the show where celebrities share stories about the foods they love most, and we dig into the history, culture, and science of those meals with experts from around the world. Today on the program, Mark Summers. If you were of my generation, if you grew up in the 80s or early 90s, you probably know Mark as the host of Nickelodeon's super popular kids game show, Double Dare, where contestants slid through chocolate syrup, were drenched in green slime, and stuck their hands up giant whipped cream-filled noses to find the coveted orange flag. Then Mark spent 20 years with the Food Network. He was the host of Unwrapped, he produced shows like Dinner Impossible and The Next Food Network Star, where he helped discover Guy Fieri. Now he has a podcast called Mark Summers Unwraps. Mark joined me for a special live show at the Crosscut Ideas Festival in Seattle, and I had so much fun planning this because we had a caterer and we were doing themed food before the show and during the show, so the audience got to snack on this special menu inspired by Double Dare and Mark's last meal. And I have to say, I was especially proud of the desserts that I came up with: a chocolate nose with crushed pistachio boogers and a mini cheesecake covered in green edible slime. This is what I love about the internet. You type in chocolate nose molds and you find chocolate nose molds. Mark and I talk about why food was such a huge part of the Double Dare physical challenges, what the famous slime was actually made of, and Mark talks about why he decided to tell the world he has OCD. Okay, let's get into it. Here is Mark Summers and me on stage at Seattle's Crosscut Ideas Festival. I'm very excited. I was already excited before I met him, but after spending an hour in the green room and him watching me eat cheese for an hour and him not eat any cheese, I'm somehow even more excited to introduce you to Mark Summers. He's gonna come on out here. Give him a round of applause.
Hey, everybody. Nice to see you.
Mark, of course, was the host of Double Dare. If you're of my generation, this was like, yes,
big. My people.
Our people. And then Unwrapped on the Food Network. And then there's so many things that Mark has done that, you know, you wouldn't know maybe unless you go to Wikipedia, which is he has this long list of producer credits, and you've done voice work, and you've hosted a bunch of other game shows. So one more round of applause for Mark before we get started.
Very kind. Very kind.
So let's start at the beginning with, with little baby Mark. I understand that your dad actually owned the biggest grocery store in Indiana.
Back in the 50s, my real name is Mark Berkowitz, there's a big surprise, and Berkey Supermarket, 920 West Michigan Street, Indianapolis, Indiana.
What was the zip code?
I don't think we had zip codes back then. It was zones. And his father came over from Hungary during all the war silliness. They first had a small liquor store, turned into the largest supermarket in the state of Indiana back in the 50s. And as a kid, on my weekends, I used to go and work there. And, teaching me the value of a dollar, you know?
So you had mentioned, because it's interesting, you were immersed in this food world, but your mom wasn't a very good cook.
Worst cook in the world. I was the only person who went to the college dorms and thought the food was excellent there.
I did, too.
Oh, my God. The worst cook in the world. And the first time, they came to Boston for Thanksgiving. And we went to a place and they had prime rib, medium rare. Because, you know, Jews cook food so there's no blood in it. Everything tastes like your wallet. And so the fact that there was food there that had flavor, I was amazed, and it changed my life.
Yeah, we realized backstage that we're the same kind of Jew.
Yes.
We're Romanian, Russian, Hungarian.
Yes.
We're probably cousins.
We might be.
And I think there's someone else out
there,
too.
Somebody else down there. We're all related.
So I actually read Steve Martin's memoir a few years ago and didn't know before then that he was a magician.
Yep.
That was his first job.
Yep.
Johnny Carson as well. You also started as a magician.
Well, I came out of the womb knowing what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in show business more than life itself. And the question is,
did you come out like this?
Yeah, almost. Uh-huh. You know, open the refrigerator, the light would go on, I'd do 5 minutes. And so I realized that I wanted to be in the entertainment world, but how do you do that in Indianapolis, Indiana? And found out I was obsessed with Johnny Carson at a young age. He was doing a game show called Who Do You Trust? And I used to watch that. Found out that Johnny did magic. And turned on TV one day, and there was this guy doing selling something called the Dante Magic Set. And it was a guy who sold insurance in Rochester, New York, put a turban on his head, and started selling these things. And so I had like huge gonads as a young child. And I called, I'll tell you what that is later. And so I called the local TV station where I saw this guy selling Dante Magic Sets, and I said, can you give me the phone number of this guy in Rochester, or wherever the hell he is? And they gave it to me, and I called him up, and I said, hi, my name is Mark Berkowitz. I do magic. Can I be the national spokesperson for the Dante Magic Set? And
he said, this is before you even had the Dante Magic Set.
Before I even had the Dante Magic Set. And he said to me, kid, you can do whatever you want, but I'm not going to pay you. So I said, great. So he said, do you want me to send you a couple of magic sets? I said, sure. So I started calling every, because back in the day, every local station had a kid show. So I called every station and said, hi, I'm the national spokesman for the Dante Magic Set. And I got on all these shows doing magic.
And so before that, did you learn how to do magic?
Oh, yeah. There was a kid, Dave Lawton, who was a member of the magic club of Wesleyan Junior High, and he started to tutor me and taught me. And so I started doing magic on local kid shows. And after doing one, Popeye and Janie on Channel 4, WTTV, the lady said afterwards, well, do you have any other magic tricks? And I said, I do. I didn't.
Yeah.
But you also learned to lie in show business. And she said, well, how about if I brought you on like every couple of weeks to do magic? So when I was 12 years old, I was a regular on Popeye and Janie in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, this is the coolest thing in the world.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it always comes back to food. Let's talk about watermelons, because the person who shifted you from magic to stand-up comedy was Gallagher.
Yeah, I was doing magic at a place called the Magic Castle in Los Angeles when I moved there in the 70s.
Yeah.
And there was a club called The Laugh Stop in Newport Beach, and I was opening for Gallagher, but I was doing 20 minutes of magic. And Leo, who was the strangest human you've ever wanted to meet in your life, said to me...
Wait, is that Gallagher's real name?
Yeah, Leo Gallagher, and it's his real name. And he pulled me aside after Wednesday night, forgive me, these are his words and not mine. He said, Berkowitz, you're an a**hole. I said... excuse me? And he goes, you're an a**hole. I said, why? And he says, how much they paying you to do those magic tricks? And I said, $150 a week. He goes, yeah, because you're a prop comic. I thought to myself, you're the biggest prop comic in the world making a boatload of money. He said, get rid of the props and do stand-up, because the people who do stand-up and open for me get $300. I went, oh, I had no idea. So I slowly weaned myself out of doing magic, became a regular at the Comedy Store in 1976, and started the career that was going nowhere. It was great.
And as I learned backstage, you know everybody, because talk about some of the people that you were doing comedy with at the time.
Well, I also talked myself into every job I ever had. I was a guy of little talent, but had the will and desire and the passion to do stuff.
Which is gonads in Hebrew.
Yes, exactly. So I was a page at CBS Television City working on Mary Tyler Moore and Sonny and Cher and Carol Burnett and stuff like that. And there was a guy, Lorenzo Music, who was eventually the voice of Garfield the Cat, many other things, Carlton and the Doorman on Rhoda, if you remember that. And he did the best warm-ups in the world. He was doing warm-ups on Mary Tyler Moore and on Newhart. And I went into his office one day and I said, you know, I do warm-ups. Never done a warm-up in my life. And he said, oh, really? He said, what shows? And I lied and told him a bunch of shows. And he said, good. Well, he said, give me your number. You know, someday if I can't do a warm-up, maybe I'll call you. And I thought, great, you know, that's never going to happen. Well, 3 weeks later, the phone rings. It was Lorenzo saying they're doing a pilot called Doc Barnard Hughes. He's a Broadway guy. He's going to do the pilot. I can't do it. Would you like to do the warm-up? And I went, sure. Well, now I'm really pooping my pants because I don't know what to do. And just sort of studied up and did the pilot.
But what do you study?
Well, I knew I was going to do magic. I knew I was going to have to do stand-up.
Yeah.
You have to talk about the show, who the people are, who are on it. I did biographies on all those kind of stuff. A little bit about the set. It was Mary Tyler Moore's company. I mean, I did as much as I possibly could put in the back of my head. And when I got done, Grant Tinker, who was married to Mary Tyler Moore at the time, ran down the stairs, gave me a hug, and said, that's the best warm-up I've ever seen. I thought,
wow. Well,
just explain to me what the hell I just did, because I had no idea. And it kind of opened up a door for me. And then I got this reputation as being the warm-up guy. So I did Soap, which was a big show at ABC at the time. And when I was doing Soap, to the right of me, they were doing Bosom Buddies, and Saget was doing the warm-up on Bosom Buddies. And to the left of us, Barney Miller was shooting, and Dave Letterman was doing the warm-ups on Barney Miller. And so that's kind of how we all got started. And I became the hot warm-up guy. And there was a guy, you may have heard of, his name was Gary Shandling, was doing warm-ups on a show called Alice, and they hated him. And they came to watch me do the warm-up on Soap, and then they hired me. I replaced Gary Shandling as a warm-up announcer on Alice. So I was doing warm-up 6 days a week, making more money than I knew what to do with, but was absolutely miserable because I wanted to be in front of the camera and not behind, and didn't know how to make that transition, you know?
Well, so you did the logical thing. You became a smoked salmon salesman.
Well,
so you could be in front of the camera again.
Let me explain. So I was doing Alice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I did Our Magazine in the daytime. Wednesday, Thursday night, I did Star Search. Friday night, I did Webster. And when
Webster
got canceled, I did, what did I do after Webster? Oh, What's Happening Now, I did after that. So I worked on all these shows, and I went through a period where every show got canceled. And I thought, oh my God, I've got two kids and a wife, and I can't pay the bills. And so a guy I went to college with, Lawrence Milner, who lives here in Seattle, had a smoked salmon company in Cape Town, South Africa. But he had an amazing product. And so I said, ship me some of that smoked salmon, and I'm going to go out and see if I can sell it here in Los Angeles.
It's the magic kits all over again.
And honest to God. And so I knocked at my first place, Jillian's Deli, in a place called Larchmont, and I sold the smoked salmon. I called Lawrence, woke him up in Cape Town, and I said, I just sold this stuff. And the next thing I know, through connections, we're selling 80,000 pounds of smoked salmon a month to the Price Club, which became Costco. And then we got into Trader Joe's, and I thought, well, I guess I'll never go into show business. I'm going to be a smoked salmon guy.
You're speaking the language of our people, Costco,
Yes. Smoked
salmon. Everyone's like, yes, yes, Mark.
And a friend of mine, Dave Garrison, who I knew from Indianapolis, who was a ventriloquist, was in Los Angeles, and called me up one day and said, I just got a call from a network I've never heard of called Nickelodeon, and they want me to audition for a game show. I don't know what it's about. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to be a producer. Why don't you go instead of me? And so I went, and they had auditioned 1,000 people for this show called Double Dare in New York, didn't like any of them. I was the first guy to do the audition in LA, called back 3 times. And at the end of August, I knew that they were going to start shooting in Philadelphia in September. And the thing I always did is I always got the name of the exec producer and the casting director and their phone numbers so I could call them. So I called Mike Klinghoffer, the exec producer, and I said, aren't you a couple of weeks out from shooting Double Dare? And he said, yeah. And I said, so have you selected anybody? And he said, no, not yet. But we were just talking about you and this other guy. But when we did the auditions for Double Dare, they had grown-ups playing the part of kids. And so they said, we don't know if you're any good with kids or not. And I said, I have kids. And they said, well, that doesn't mean anything. And I said, I used to do magic shows for kids. And they said, well, that doesn't mean anything anyway. So I came up with the concept of putting me and whoever this other person was, put us in a studio and do the show with real live kids and let the best man win. So he said, I'll call you back. And an hour later, he said, what are you doing over Labor Day? And I said, coming to New York and doing Double Dare? And he said, yeah. So they flew me and whoever this other guy is, I still to this day don't know. And we did the rehearsals. And then taped 20 minutes of Double Dare. And 2 days later, they called me and they said, congratulations, you're the host. And I said, well, after auditioning 1,000 in New York and 1,000 in LA, why didn't I get the job? And I said, quite honestly, you and this other guy were about the same. But at the end of his audition, he looked in the camera and said, are you guys done or you want me to do something else? Mm. And I looked in the camera and I said, we'll be back with more Double Dare right after this. And because I threw it to commercial, because I watched Bob Barker do that my entire life.
Yeah.
They said it seemed more professional and it changed my life, and that's how I ended up becoming the host on
Double
Dare.
I love it.
It's really weird.
So good.
Yeah.
Love it. I watched Double Dare a few years ago because some friends, I think one of them is here tonight, we have a really boringly named club called TV Club that we've done for 10 years, where we get together monthly. We watch an 80s or 90s sitcom or game show, and then we make punned food to go with it.
Oh, fun.
So Double Dare came up eventually. We probably did make Mark's summer rolls at that point.
Yeah, probably did.
And it was so refreshing to watch because when you watch kids on TV now, it feels like they're all media trained and they're too precocious and they know too much about whatever they're talking about and the prizes are so big. But all the kids seemed nervous.
Well, we picked real kids.
Yeah, they were real
kids. If you
watch
the Disney Channel, they all look like they came out of Central Casting. They had blonde hair and blue eyes and were perfectly coiffed. And we had kids with pimples and, you know, dressed poorly. And
it was good.
Yeah, and so the kids at home related to that.
Yeah,
you know?
And the prizes, I remember one of the prizes was you win a Casio handheld dictionary.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't, and they were like, woo!
Yeah.
It was so good.
Eventually, we gave trips to space camp and the first computers and all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
But, and it was interesting. The network, after the show launched and we were getting huge ratings, they sort of went on and tried to figure out what else can we put on Nickelodeon that's going to be a big hit. And so they didn't watch what was going on in Philly. And so the exec producers, Mike and Dana, had sort of you know, a different point of view as to what should be done. So we used to let the kids name their own teams. And at one point, we got a letter or a phone call from the network because one of the teams was called the Bodacious Tatas. And we got our hands
slapped
on that.
So 80s.
Yeah, Bodacious Tatas, great.
I might steal that if I need a pen name someday. So the thing about Double Dare that's so perfect for this podcast is there's so much food.
Yep.
So for anybody who's never seen the show, it was a kids game show and they would, you know, answer questions, but if they couldn't answer the question, they would
take the physical challenge.
And this meant like sticking your hand up a nose that's full of whipped cream to pull the orange flag out. There was sliding on chocolate syrup.
Yep.
There was popcorn. There was banana, spaghetti and meatballs.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember if it was real or not.
It was.
How did the show become so food focused? Why food?
Well, they did focus groups and found out that kids like to get messy, and that kids often are told to, you know, stay neat and clean and go to your room and clean it up. But so we were doing the antithesis of that, which was rewarding kids for being sloppy.
Yeah.
And we would get our hands slapped constantly. The big controversy was, you know, we were using real food and there's people, you know, in Europe who, you know, aren't eating and
In Europe,
yeah, so, you know, they weren't as many homeless people back in the day then, and you know, why are you using, you know, eggs and all that stuff? So Mike Klinghoffer, who was brilliant, still is, came up with the concept of telling people that we only went to restaurant supply places that sold us dated food.
Well, this is what I read. I read in so many articles that they said, no, it was food that is expired.
Yeah.
And I thought, so the kids are sliding through expired whipped cream?
Total. We use real food all the time, and the insurance company made sure that if the kids got the food in their mouth, that they didn't want to get sick, so everything had to be edible.
Okay.
So that was, yeah, so we just came up with that lie to have people leave us alone.
Yeah. Well, something I didn't want to bring up, but then I decided I did want to after hearing an interview you did. Well, you know, it was in the news and you wrote a book about it that you have OCD.
Yep.
And so it turned into something, I think, bigger than it needed to be, of people, just the ironies on the show where everything's really messy. I kind of just wanted to give you the opportunity, you know, in your own words, to talk about that since it's been kind of swept around in this media storm.
Yeah, it's been exaggerated like crazy. Yeah, I have OCD. It runs in our family. When we did the rehearsals and the auditions for Double Dare, there was no obstacle course. We just talked about what's going to be. So the first day I walk into the studio, there's a guy putting, you know, 100 pounds of whipped cream on a slide, and somebody's pouring this, you know, green liquid. And I said, what are you guys doing? And they said, well, the obstacle course, if you win, if you can run 8 obstacles in 60 seconds or less, you win the big prizes.
The Casio Dictionary.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I said to them, stupidly, do you really think kids want to do that? And apparently they did. We shot 525 episodes of that thing. So the first 65 episodes, I'm not wearing tennis shoes. I'm in a pristine suit. And I learned how to dodge that stuff. Never got a drop on me. Mm-hmm. And after the first 65, the ratings were exploded. I got a phone call from the network saying we need to have a meeting before we start shooting the next group of shows. And they said, we just did focus groups and found out the kids think you're like a crazy uncle or maybe an older brother, but they want you to get messy. And I said, why would they want me to do that? And they said, well, they just think it would make you more part of the show. So when you've waited I was 34 years old. I waited my whole life to become a host on a show, and I wasn't going to say, I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. So I decided to, you know, go along with it. And there were days that were more miserable than others. You know, people say, well, he had the worst time and hated doing that. No, I had a great time. It was the best job I ever had in my entire life. I loved doing it. But I did have issues about getting dunk and slime and stuff. And so I didn't come out and talk about it. I was hosting a talk show on Lifetime called Biggers and Summers. Sissy Biggers was my co-host. And we had a psychiatrist on, Dr. Eric Hollander, who had written a book about OCD. I didn't know what that was. And I was doing the preparation the night before, reading about OCD, and I thought, oh, geez, I do that, I do that, I do that. The stuff I've been doing my whole life, it has a name. So I had to decide, do I go on TV the next day and lie and pretend that this is not a part of my life, or do I tell the truth? And before the show started, I talked to Dr. Hollander in the green room and said, I think I have this. And he said, why? And I started to discuss it. And he said, well, when we go on the air, if you want to talk about it, we were live, you can. And so I came out on live TV in 97, and said, I think I have this. Well, the next thing I know, the phone is exploding. Mm-hmm. My parents were upset that I talked about it. Didn't talk to me for about 2 years after I came out.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They said, we don't do those things. Oh, really? And next thing I know, I'm on the Howard Stern show. I'm on Oprah. Dateline's following me around for a year doing a piece on me. And, you know, Howie Mandel got a pass because his OCD is about a million times worse than mine. But I got labeled as the crazy guy who, you know, does all this stuff. So it took a while to kind of overcome all the silliness. I wrote a book about it and whatever. And but it, you know, here I am. I guess I'm fine, you know.
Oh, let's take the applause. He's fine.
Mark said he was born knowing he wanted to be an entertainer. But when he was a kid, he also entertained the idea of becoming a rabbi. And he wasn't sure which career path to go down. So when he was a teenager, he met with his rabbi at Indianapolis Hebrew Congregation because his rabbi had actually started his career in entertainment. Mark asked him what to do. Should he go into showbiz or should he study to become a rabbi? And the rabbi told him, as a rabbi, you can help a small congregation a lot, but as a performer, you can help a lot of people a little. Spoiler alert, Mark chose slime. When we come back, Mark tells us what the edible slime on Double Dare was made of, and of course, he shares his last meal. If you're a fan of naturally gorgeous, off-the-beaten-path vacation spots with small-town charm, you're going to want to plan a visit to Washington State's Kitsap Peninsula, where you can grab a scoop of homemade ice cream and stroll around the adorable European seaside village of Paulsbo, or walk on the ferry in Seattle and get off in downtown Bainbridge Island. And May is the perfect month to visit Bremerton or Silverdale, where you can get out of the city and into the forest in just 15 minutes for a beautiful hike. Enjoy a farm-to-table meal at Bremerton's Restaurant Lola, a Black-owned business. I really need to make the trip out there for their Creole brunch. And in the morning, stop by Saboteur Bakery for croissants that are so flaky and buttery, you'll think you're in Paris. There's also a gorgeous golf course in the middle of the forest, and there are several naval museums in Bremerton. Go to visitkitsap.com/yourlastmeal to learn more. That's K-I-T-S-A-P. Or you can find a link in the show notes. Play and stay on the Kitsap Peninsula, the natural side of the Puget Sound. If you like listening to Your Last Meal, you might like watching my new TV show, The Nosh with Rachel Bell. We just wrapped up season one, so there are 4 tasty episodes ready for you to binge at cascadepbs.org. In episode 1, I convince an East Coast skeptic that Seattle now has fantastic bagels. And in the season finale, we go truffle hunting just about an hour outside of Seattle. Episodes are a quick bite. Just 8.5 minutes long. So grab a snack and cozy up with The Nosh. Available anytime, anywhere at cascadepbs.org or find a link in the show notes.
What is the slime made of?
Slime initially was applesauce, green food coloring, vanilla pudding. And occasionally a little oatmeal. And because once again, it had to go into kids' mouths at some point. So when we did the latest version of Double Dare right before COVID, they brought it back for 2 years. And Nickelodeon is a machine now. It's a corporation as opposed to when I was doing it. It was just like a little mom and pop thing. And they have a company that makes slime exclusively for Nickelodeon. So as the exec producer of the show as well, I had to go in and we had to judge the viscosity.
Do a slime tasting.
Well, we had the viscosity. Do you want it to be thick slime? Do you want it to be thin slime? Do you
want
it to
drip over?
So, you know, it's become a whole sort of corporate deal. But initially it was vanilla pudding, applesauce, and, you know, it was actually tasty.
And what was cleanup like? I read, is this true that it took 600 to 1,000 towels per episode to clean up?
Yeah, and it was crazy. We had a thing called the tank, and we initially filled it with styrofoam balls and one thing after another. And we got clever one day. We filled it with 5,000 pounds of baked beans. And after 3 days, it smelled like a bad school cafeteria. It just was rancid. And we tried to figure out how to get the beans out, and we tried to shuffle it into big trash bags, and the bags kept breaking. So we eventually had to call, you know, the people who clean out septic tanks. So the guy comes with hip waders, and he looks and he goes, what's that? And we said, beans. And he goes,
beans.
Why you got beans in there? And we said, well, it's a He said, what do you want me to do? And we said, we want you to take the beans out of there. So he brought in one of those big hoses that they suck, you know, septic tanks out.
The bean vacuum.
And he sucked the beans out. So yeah, when we moved down to Florida, initially in Philadelphia, we had a problem. But when we built the Nick Studios in Orlando, they built in drains to the floors. So we were able to take squeegees and pour it down drains. Boy, the behind the scenes of my glorious life.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
I read that the guy who came to get the beans said that it was worse than any septic issue he'd ever dealt with.
It was. It was disgusting. I mean, you walk in and go, oh my God. The first time we did Double Dare, so we had this blue, like crazy fluorescent floor, and they cleaned it and then they rolled it up and stored it because they figured, well, we never do the show again. Well, you know, 6 weeks later we were there, so they unrolled it and everybody who touched the floor broke out in welts and stuff because whatever creepy crud was on the floors we all got. And so, like, there were nurses there trying to treat us with, you know, boils and blisters because of the crud that was on the floors that they didn't clean up properly.
But again, he lived.
Yes, I lived.
So much living.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to the crux of the show.
Yes.
What would your last meal be, Mark Summers?
My last meal. Okay, anybody here from Chicago? Really, the worst pizza in the world is in Chicago. Don't ever go there for pizza. They serve it, it's like a loaf of bread with some bad tomato sauce on it.
A casserole.
The worst. So the first time I had pizza, growing up in Indiana, my parents not only couldn't cook, but they couldn't eat good food. And so I went to a trip in New York when I was about 13 or 14, and I had my first taste of pizza, and I thought, oh my God, what is this? It's insane. So fast forward the tape, I end up working at Food Network and meet some of the best chefs in the world. And there's a man by the name of Mark Vetri who has restaurants not only in Las Vegas, but in Philadelphia. Makes the world's best pizza in the world. So I would start off, it has to be thin crust, be able to read a newspaper through it kind of situation.
Oh, that's okay. Very thin.
So,
wait, and so Philadelphia pizza?
Well, Philly makes great pizza. There's also Boston, Regina's, great pizza. And, you know, there's so many places in New York, you can't name them all, but there are many places in New York. So East Coast pizza, I finally found that I live in Santa Barbara, and there's a guy there who used to have a place in Brooklyn who now has a place in Santa Barbara, so thank God I have East Coast pizza.
Oh, what is it called?
Bettina.
Oh, Bettina. Okay,
yeah.
I was thinking
it's really
else.
Good.
Okay.
So there's that. So Mark Vetri made a salad also that would be part of this meal, and it was an escarole salad with apples, radish, and a lemon vinaigrette. Unbelievable, just simple and fabulous.
So coincidentally, the catering company that, you know, did the snacks before, so you had that little boat with the salad.
Oh yeah.
She knows Mark.
She knows Mark?
Yeah, she used to live there. She goes, oh, I know who that is.
Oh,
I know.
God.
She said, I know that salad.
Oh my.
And so that's when she was able to kind of recreate it. So
fantastic.
It was an amazing coincidence.
So
yeah.
That, you know, that would be part of the meal. Oh, start with the pizza, go to that escarole salad. And then a cacio e pepe, which is one of my favorites.
So good.
Simple. Can make it at home. It always kind of tastes best in, you know, Italian restaurants. But that would definitely be a major part of my life.
Which is why we had the cacio e pepe kind of fondue back there, if you tried that. We were trying to make this menu, and I said, we are not serving them pizza because it's not going to be good. Like, it's just
you
not.
Can't
there's
reheat
not a
it.
Kitchen here.
Yeah.
And cacio e pepe, you have to eat right away.
You have to eat right away.
I don't know if you've made it. I think it's
oh, yeah.
actually, it's so simple, but it's hard to make because if the cheese sticks
yes.
to the pan, and
yes.
so I was like, we're not doing that. So she came up with this idea, and I just have to throw this out of here because it's so timely. The head chef, the owner of the catering company, she catered Love is Blind when they were filming here in town, which I thought was really cool. Anyway, so some of the food that we did was connected with your last meal, which you were back there with me, watching me eat it. Okay, so pizza,
Ina Garten
salad.
And a chef by the name of Jonathan Waxman have great recipes for a cacio e pepe if you want to make it at home. So that would be it. And then because I'm a cheesecake fanatic, Junior's Cheesecake out of New York mm-hmm. would be the dessert. There are more calories in this meal than any human should be allowed to have. But that would be, you know, to me, like dying and going to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
All fantastic.
Is there any significance to any of these dishes, or is it just things that are delicious to you?
Things that are delicious. I don't know about you, but I tend to go to Italy more than I should. And I don't think I've been to a bad restaurant ever in any town I've been to in Italy. And I've been lucky enough to have great jobs. And at Food Network, I get to hang out with people who are amazing. So if you go to Philadelphia, go to Mark Petrie's restaurant. He does have two in Vegas. Also very good. And I became good friends with him, and you know, he's sort of my go-to guy when it comes to, you know, when I go to Philly, it's mm-hmm. the first stop.
Mark, we have a little surprise for you.
Uh-oh.
Based on your last meal. I was just saying, like, your kindergarten teacher is gonna like bust
yeah.
through this wall right now. It's a culinary surprise. So we had the caterer make cheesecake that all of you afterwards
oh
are gonna go home with.
Thank you.
But we wanted it to have slime on it too. So.
That's hysterical.
And then this is a chocolate nose. This was my idea. Because of the noses on Double Dare.
Very
and so
funny.
We did pistachio to kind of
oh,
represent the boogers.
That's good.
But is it good? Mm. And also, I can't remember what we came up with because she was going around back and forth of how to get exactly what you said, the viscosity of the slime. But I was adamant that it tastes good and not be gloopy.
It does taste good.
Okay, good.
They nailed it.
Yeah. I wanted to put it under everyone's seat so we could have an Oprah moment. But then I was told that my idea was going to give everyone food poisoning. And so
I did that. I did Oprah once.
You will take it.
I did Oprah and... she loved moon pies, so we did. I did a whole history of moon pies there, and then under everybody's chair, they had
You get a moon pie! You get a moon pie!
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
You get a commercial break! You get a commercial break! When we come back, Mark shares his, quote, strange relationship with Ina Garten.
Yeah, so you were with the Food Network for a long time. You
20 years.
20 years, and you produced many shows. And
Dinner Impossible, Restaurant Impossible, and then I hosted a show called Unwrapped for
And so
years.
Eating all of that food, who are your favorite chefs as far as eating their food? I mean, you've been exposed to everybody.
Well, a lot of them are my friends. Bobby Flay is probably one of the best chefs I've ever... I mean, he's amazing. We happen to be friends, so... he's been my mentor for many years, and so I'll call Bobby and say, Bobby, I got a problem. He'll say, come on over, I'll cook for you.
Aww.
And so I go to his house, and I had the other day, like, the best fried chicken that I've ever had in my entire life, and I said to him, how the hell do you make this stuff? And he said, why would I tell you?
He's afraid you're going to steal his fried chicken.
Yeah, no, he's not. And so Bobby is amazing. He has a new restaurant at Caesar's Palace, Italian, called Amalfi. Go there. And he's getting ready to open a new French restaurant in Caesar's, so that's great. Michael Simon is my other go-to guy. Just ridiculous food. I have a strange relationship with Ina Garten. I don't know Ina that well.
Does anybody really?
Oh, I know. She's kind of shy. But during COVID, everything we downloaded from the internet was an Ina Garten recipe. And for some reason, I have her email. I have no idea why I have it. And
that's a humble brag.
We made some one of her dishes one night, and it just didn't come out the way I thought it was going to. So I emailed her and said to her, you know, let me explain what's going on here. And so she told me why I screwed it up, which was fantastic.
Okay.
So when we tried it again, she was right, and we fixed it. So she's a real sweetheart. And, you know, luckily I've got to work with all those people. And they're chefs, I tell you why the Food Network worked initially so well. Those people were, you know, at the top of their game prior to the Food Network. They were chefs doing extremely well in restaurants. And then the food thing came after the fact. And so they're so down to earth. Rachel's a good friend. I mean, all these people happen to be really super nice people. And I was hosting a Food Network star when Guy Fieri won. So I got him his agent, who he still has, and we've been friends for years. And the most down-to-earth human you've ever met in your entire life. I always say, if you know, he wouldn't give you the shirt off his back, he'd give you the skin off his back. He's just the nicest man you'd ever
meet. The donkey sauce out of his bottle.
What's that?
He'll give you the donkey sauce out of his
bottle. The donkey sauce out of his bottle, yeah. So, I mean, it's been a fun sort of career where I've gotten paid to throw green liquids at 11-year-olds and then eat great food. So, and talk about the history of Tootsie Rolls. So it's been a charmed existence.
Yeah. That's why I love doing these interviews, because I think for some people, you know, maybe of my generation, they might only know you from Double Dare or someone might only know you from Food Network. And you have such an interesting story. You actually have a one-man show that you've done that you're reviving.
Yeah, it's called The Life and Slimes of Mark Summers. And I got diagnosed with cancer about 12 years ago, and then I was in a car accident where I broke every bone in my face, and I thought, well, there's two opportunities. I don't think I'm going to be around if I keep going through these kind of things. And I've been talking about doing theater for years, and finally, it's too long a story, but I ended up doing summer stock 10, 11 years ago, and I was playing Vince Fontaine in Greece. And a guy by the name of Drew Gasparini, who I was backstage with, introduced me to a guy by the name of Alex Brightman. Alex has since starred on Broadway, first doing School of Rock and now Beetlejuice. And he wrote my one-man show. The goal was, my last job I want to do is I'd like to do this off-Broadway. But COVID happened and everything shut down. So
save
somehow
that for the podcast, your last job, Mark.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay.
And so we're reviving it. I'm doing it in a place called the Gretna Theater near Hershey, Pennsylvania in August. And then I'm booked for a month in Buffalo, New York, hoping to eventually we'll get it to New York and do it off Broadway. So I'm scared at 72. Can I memorize 60 pages. The frightening part is it's about my life. You think it would be easy, but it's not.
I told you, do it in interpretive dance.
I know.
It's so much easier to remember.
Be easier.
Yeah.
So, I'm still kind of pushing the envelope. I'm trying to slow down, but I'm not good at it. I have a podcast now called Mark Summers Unwraps, and there's 850,000 podcasts out there. At the end of week one, we were number 77, which is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
And so the phone started to ring, Sirius Satellite called us, and then publicists started to call us. We've had some good bookings. I just did George Wendt from Cheers, which is coming up soon. But the first person I had was Anthony Ramos. Anthony Ramos was doing Grease with me, and next thing I know, he's in Hamilton, and now he's starring in every movie. So he was our first guest, and then Guy Fieri did it, and we've got, who else? We have Paula Poundstone coming up, and a lot of good people. So if you're bored some night and can't sleep, Mark Summers Unwraps is on wherever you hear your podcast.
We're going to get you to 76.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And it's also, we do it on YouTube as well, so it's visual as well, and you can watch us talk to each other if that's interesting at all. But yeah, it's all cool.
Okay, we're going to take some of the questions
here.
So I think we kind of answered this a little, but someone wants to know what the Double Dare slime tastes like. I mean, it must have tasted like applesauce and pudding.
Yeah, mostly vanilla pudding. It had the strongest flavor. Yeah, that was good.
Once you moved to the corporate slime, did that have a flavor?
I didn't taste it.
Okay.
Yeah. I had no interest in doing that. So.
Did you ever do the obstacle course?
Many times.
Mm-hmm.
And almost died. It's a lot harder than it looked. But yeah, I have done it many, many times.
What's the craziest thing that you saw happen on Double Dare?
The craziest thing was parents would lie. The two things that happened. And so we had a kid. We had an obstacle that we tried called the sewer chute. And the kid sort of flipped upside down and landed on his head. We used to say kids bounce, and they pretty much did. But if you look at this video, it's me going for the rest of the time. Are you okay? Are you okay? Are you feeling, you know? And so the guy got through obstacle six. Obstacle seven was a gigantic TV. And so we go backstage, and this kid's father was one of the biggest attorneys in Philadelphia. And he comes backstage, and he goes, you know, my kid really wanted that television set. He said, oh, great, but he only got to obstacle number six. He said, yeah, but he was on that really dangerous obstacle. So here's the deal. I won't sue you if you'll
Double
give us
Black
the
mail?
Large screen TV and obstacle number seven. And Nickelodeon went, yeah, anything else you want? So that's how that happened. And the other one that never aired, we always asked on the forums, do you have any broken bones? Have you broken any bones? And the kid said, no. The parents said, no. Well, we go to obstacle number one. Kid gets the flag. He hands it to the next kid. And then those floors were slippery. And the kid slipped, and he had something called glass bones disease. And the bone went right through his arm.
Ugh.
Okay? Well, being the strong human I am, I left the studio because I thought I was going to throw up. And Robin, my assistant, went over and, you know, took care of this kid. And we found out that they lied on the form, and it was the only obstacle course that we never finished and the only show that we didn't finish, and I felt bad for the kid who was his partner, but because he lied, and they tried to sue us to pay for the bills, and of course...
You just gave him a TV, too.
Yeah. So that show never aired, but those are the only two weird things that ever happened in the 500-plus episodes we did.
So after you had that accident, I read that you lost feeling from
My car accident?
Yeah,
I have no feeling from here down. I don't feel anything, so I'm always nervous. If I have a cold, my wife will often tell me, you need to blow your nose, because it's like, so yeah, I when I brush my teeth, I have no feeling.
No, because I was going to ask how that affects eating.
Doesn't affect the eating because the taste buds aren't there, but okay. I just have to always wipe my mouth and nose because I have no idea what it feels like.
You have anymore. You're a cat, Mark Summers.
I know,
you have nine lives.
Many lives.
Yeah, luckily you don't have that glass bones disease.
No.
Tell us where, because I think people are always curious when people come to town, where did you eat in Seattle last night?
Oh, at the Pink Door.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had been there several years ago and always thought about it again. And my friend who I did the smoked salmon with said, you want to go back? And I said, yeah. So it just was great. The food there is amazing. We sat there for 3 hours before we knew it. And, when COVID happened, the whole restaurant scene sort of went downhill and so many places that are our favorites have closed. And a lot of people, the Culinary Institute of America, which is based in upstate New York, is having trouble fulfilling classes now. And a couple of CIAs have closed around the country because people have realized, you work 7 days a week, holidays, you're never with your family, and you're making $40,000 a year. And trying to find people to work in the restaurant business is tough, and unless you're paying somebody now 20 plus bucks, they don't want to do it. And so many of our favorite places have closed, and I don't know what's going on. The hospitality industry is changed dramatically and will continue to change. When I was in New York last time, a couple of months ago, so many of the places I used to hang out with don't exist anymore.
I know, it's so
sad. I've been going for 40, 50 years, and they're just not there.
We're going to bring it up to a higher note. We're going to do a little bit of a speed round before we finish.
Okay.
What is your ideal perfect birthday cake?
Wow. Chocolate upon chocolate. I love chocolate anything. So chocolate thing with, if there was chocolate icing, that would be the perfect cake.
What's your favorite movie treat when you go to the movies?
Buttered popcorn and hot tamales.
Do you pour them into the popcorn?
I don't pour them in, but I do like those two things.
Yes. So your mom wasn't a good cook.
No.
But was there something growing up that you did love that one of your parents made? If it was your birthday and you could choose anything that you would have chosen?
Reservations.
To the hottest place in Indiana.
There was a Chinese restaurant called the Lotus Garden, and that was my favorite restaurant growing up as a kid, yeah.
What is your favorite food show to watch?
There's a place called, a show called The Lost Kitchen. It's on Magnolia. Mm-hmm. Do some research on this thing. It's a lady who has gone through some turmoil in her life, and she is in this really small town in Maine. And
it's called Freedom Maine,
Freedom,
right?
Freedom Maine.
Yeah.
And the only way you get a reservation is you send in a postcard, and if she draws your postcard, you get to go and have dinner there. And so it's a fascinating show. My son produces a lot of shows for Food Network. He does everything Alex Garnicelli does, so I tend to watch a lot of shows that he does so he can continue to work and not ask me for money. anything Bobby does, I like. So, you know, he does some good stuff.
Mark Summers, everybody!
Thank you! Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for coming.
Have a nice evening, folks. Thanks for stopping by. Thank you.
And that was Mark Summers' last meal. Make sure and check out Mark's podcast. It's called Mark Summers Unwraps. It was so lovely meeting Mark. We spent about an hour together in the green room before the show, and he was just so curious. He asked a lot of questions. He was so engaging. Super great guy. Thanks to Crosscut Ideas Festival and CPM for having your last meal at the festival. Special thanks to my favorite cat lady, Andrea O'Meara, Jake the Lizard Newman, Anne O'Dowd, and Jesse, owner of Seattle Ripe Catering, who made all my Double Dare dessert dreams come true. Your Last Meal is a Slide Down the Dinosaur Media production. This episode was produced by me, original theme music by Prom Queen. If you're looking for a way to show your support for the show, it is so easy and free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars, write a couple nice words, you'll have good karma. Follow along on Instagram at @HelloRachelBell, and I have a newsletter where I announce events like this live event with Mark Summers, giveaways, all kinds of stuff. Find a link in the show notes or type in rachelbell.substack.com. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal.
We did it! You want your nose?
Sure.
I was pretty proud of myself. I wanted to have an orange, candied orange peel coming out of the nose,
God,
like a flag. Yeah.
Hysterical.
I'm Rachel Bell with Your Last Meal. Okay, I have to be the kindergarten teacher, and with the people in the back mind coming up to the front, sorry, it would just feel really nice to have you guys closer to us. So we're gonna close the Seattle freeze and bring you close to us. If you've been listening to Your Last Meal for a while and you haven't left me a review, shame on you!